This week on the droids are back to talk about chapter 23 and 24 of The Mandalorian season 3. The season has come to a close. The spies, the return, all that and more on the droids.
These are the droids you're looking for. These are the droids. I'm no one. There's
always a bigger fish.
Hello there.
Rebellion's built on hope.
We are looking for a droid here.
Welcome back to the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. And once again, it may not be morning where you are, but it is morning where we are. And on this edition of Wake Up with Mando, have you had your identity stolen by a long-thought vanquished foe? We'll show you how to put that out on fire. Plus, we're ready to help you ride off into the sunset with your adopted child if you just want it all to end. So let's get started with Wake Up with Mando.
Well, I gotta tell you, Mike, it's Ryan and Mike today. That's the permutation of the combo,
yep.
So people know. And then I think you probably said it. Here's the waking up part. I have my cup of coffee here. I've not drank it yet. But if people want to get like a sense of the vibe we're going for right now, it's that my voice isn't completely awake, but I have a nice cup of Joe here. that's the new Joe is the new member of the podcast. Cup of Joe.
I mean, I think the Wake Up with Mando permutation of this is you and I. There will not be Wake Up Mando without just you and I.
Yeah, I don't think anyone else is waking up to do Mando. You know what I mean?
I'm sure someone is. I'm sure there are a lot of other Star Wars podcasts.
People are waking up. I mean, there are these people on the internet that you see. They like stay up until midnight to watch the show, and that's exciting.
And look, props to them.
I don't know if anyone's really... Well, someone is, but I don't know if a lot of people are doing that anymore.
Yeah, I think I would if it was Andor. And
like,
I was 23.
Yeah, when we had that, there was like that exciting, a lot of people stayed up until midnight, the episode that Ahsoka showed up in season 2.
Yeah.
Which was exciting. I would describe the finale of this season as like ceremoniously unceremonious.
Yes.
You know, like it's like the... I understand I don't want to catch hell on the internet for this. So I understand that a lot of substantial things happened in this episode. But after the season, I saw a review that described it as meandering, which I thought was very accurate.
Oh, I thought you were going to say very generous.
No, I mean, well, okay. So like there was that last sequence. I mean, we're jumping right into the last episode. Where they were just kind of like, it really felt like wheel spinny, where it was like, all right, like we're just gonna like wipe to different areas, like, and just wrap this all up.
Yeah.
I don't, you know.
Yeah.
I was gonna say I'm still processing my thoughts, but I'm not. I wish I had more. It was a very underwhelming season of television.
Very much so.
And I understand that people on Twitter and, you know, people who write for Slash Film or previously written for Slash Film, like, said things like,
if
you've been a doubter about this season of the Mandalorian, just wait until you see tonight's episode. And it's like, a lot of episodes had exciting aspects, but for that to be true, it needs to be an episode that puts everything else in context and makes it more exciting, which it did not.
No.
So it's like, are we really just living one episode at a time? That they just need to put out the last episode needs to be good, and we're like, well, that was all worth it. You know, it's just weird.
I mean, Ryan, look, we all need to live in the present. There is no past. There is no future. And so really, just focus on the one episode you get each week. Don't try to string it together.
I understand that this is a show about an action figure and his baby green ear guy.
And it's become even more about action figures this season.
Yeah, and there's literally like the little green guy has become Krang. I get it. So this is escapism, and so that's fine, but I do find myself wondering why we had to, like, sit through that episode where they're eating glowy ice pops.
Yep.
For it not to matter at all. I don't even want to say virtually. Literally no payoff? Like, literally no payoff at all?
Yeah. Absolutely not.
Interesting. Like, it introduced interesting aspects, but it didn't, like, do, and that can be incorporated. Just because you have an interesting idea doesn't mean it needs to be a whole episode. That's what world building is.
Yeah. I think, look, we're diving in, and I'm glad we're just getting into it. I think we've said it before, the people who might review this on iTunes, on podcasts, might say we don't love Star Wars. We love Star
Listen
Wars,
to
which
our
is
Andor episode.
Which is why we ask for more from Star Wars. We come to this with, I'm not saying that all Star Wars has to be, you know, we love the idea that there are different genres of Star Wars, and there can be different things that Star Wars can be, and different series can be different things. And I don't think any, I honestly kind of came in with a bit more goodwill for this season of Mandalorian, being like, look, okay, it's going to be hard for me to separate my brain from what I just saw from Andor. However, I want to give this the benefit of the doubt. I want to be like, this is the one I'm going to turn off my brain and have some fun with. But you still have to execute it well. I'll bring it up in here and I'll say, the Mario movie is not a great movie, but the Mario movie is like, if you're ever watching Top Chef, if you do a simple dish, you better do it well. And you do a simple dish with the Mandalorian, you do a simple show, you better do it well. And they're not doing that well in the season. And as much as we didn't like the way season two finished, they did do it well in the first two seasons. And we're not there anymore.
Yeah, it's I agree with you, and it's and I love the Top Chef metaphor, and it's interesting. There's this weird dichotomy. Again, I understand that it feels like a lot of the time we're talking about things we don't like about Star Wars, and Mike, like you said, like we want more from it. We want more for people who really genuinely enjoy it, you know, who are, you know, as I heard someone say, when you have a friend, you help them wash the dog poop off their shoe. Now, Star Wars is not asking for our help, nor do they need our help. But it's like, this is, you know, we're a Star Wars podcast, so it's what we're talking about. However, it's strange because you can make the argument that you're like, this show it's aimed for a younger audience base, which is perfectly valid and extremely fair. I think that we've brought this up on the podcast. I think that younger audiences deserve really well-told stories as well. And I find it a baffling choice if you are going for a younger audience. And I understand maybe they haven't specifically said that they are, but I feel like good stories tell you how to experience them. Mm-hmm. This is clearly aimed at like a more family friendly thing than, say, Andor. Most of Star Wars is extremely family friendly.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how many 7-year olds are getting really into Andor. You know what I mean? Or whatever.
Yeah, it does not paste well enough for 7-year olds, probably.
Right. So, and fine. That's great.
It shouldn't be. It shouldn't be. No.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a strange choice. I felt a little uncomfortable in the last two episodes, and this is how I'm bringing it back to the last two episodes. Yep. Mike, I got it. That all of a sudden we have like Mandalorians like stabbing stormtroopers in the neck and stuff.
Oh yeah,
you know, like I and again, it wasn't like super gory or anything, but there was just something like a little weird to me about that.
Ryan, they heard my comment about it not being enough like John Wick. Because if you remember in John Wick 3, they're wearing like the armor helmets and the armor suits where the only way you can really kill them is by shooting them in between the helmet and the armor or stabbing them. It's the same place. They listen to me. Why am I not enjoying it then?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And there are like, we'll get a little more sequential with it. But there were some things like that I was like, this is odd. That they've decided to really, you know, for a show aimed at children mostly, to really up the violence at this point.
Yeah.
You know, I understand that there are different levels of kind of on-screen violence, and Star Wars kind of occupies in that bloodless, like, people are dying, but they're not really dying. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's, you know? Yeah. But, like, all of a sudden it became, like, very hand-to-hand and, like, intimate. I just thought it was odd. I thought it was an odd choice.
Ryan, though, speaking of, like, the faceless non-deaths, the bloodless deaths, I think one of the things that's challenging, and thinking about these last two episodes, Paz Vizsla dies. When you have these characters who are not our main characters, who show up very briefly, and they're helmeted, it's a lot harder, again, to care about them. Like, we care about Mando. We care about Bo-Katan. We've spent a lot of time with him. We even maybe care about the armorer. We sort of know who they are somewhat. We don't really know who Paz Vizsla is. He has a son, but we haven't really had any scenes or anything other than him trying to save his son from the giant raptor creature.
Right.
And then Axe Wolves, I think, is his name.
Axe Wolves?
Remember the one that Bo-Katan has to win back the Mandalorian group from in that episode with Jack Black and Lizzo, where he's the head of all the Mandalorians and they fight and she bests him. And so then, obviously, she takes over the leadership there. Right. In the finale, he's bringing down the ship. And you think about how much more powerful that could be if we had any sense of who he was or cared about him at all. And yes, he probably still could have done his moment where he blasts out the window and flies out of the ship, and he would have been fine. But I'm sitting there and I'm just like, I have no Jeopardy feeling at all. I am not concerned about this character. I don't even know this character. And it goes back to the action figure comment. But you talk about there's all these villains who are just perishing with nothing. And, you know, they don't really die, but they die. And then with our characters, what's the tension in these action sequences? Because we know our leads aren't going anywhere. And then there are times where we spend several minutes of screen time with people that we don't even know. There's a sequence where a female Mandalorian with a blue helmet that I thought was supposed to be Bo-Katan but isn't Bo-Katan in the finale is flying around and fighting. And I'm like, I don't know who that is. I don't know. I guess I'm rooting for her because she's part of the Mandalorians. But it was like, why can't we add something to this or could have done something earlier in the season to make me care? I mean, Game of Thrones had sprawling casts, and every member of it you knew something about to get you some sort of weight in watching what they were doing. And instead, again, I did feel like I was just watching some action figures go bang, bang.
Yeah, I mean, there's no... It's just like, there's no sense of where anyone's going or trying to get. And
no.
Like, I'm speaking, like, spatially and physically. I understand that there are emotional stakes, but... You know, the most engaging sequence I felt in these two episodes was when Mando was fighting the stormtroopers through, like, where he was having the blast doors opened.
Yeah.
One by one. Because it was this clear,
What was that reminiscent of? Where did that idea come from?
It was interesting because it was like, okay, like, this is interesting. He needs to get from here to there.
Yeah.
There are, whatever, six people or eight people. I forget how many layers there were. And he can't take them all on at once, so he's found a way to siphon them. And it's like, he needs to be strategic in this. So it's interesting to watch him, like, execute that. And then there are things that are really interesting in terms of building tension. You see, like, the hints of what it could be if it was all just kind of put together a little more elegantly.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, that one dude who's jetpacking up to the Star Destroyer for a long time.
Oh, yeah, that's Axe Wolves.
Yes. He gets up there. Yeah. So that's like tension building. He has a far way to go and not a lot of time to do it. There's also this element of like, can they fly that high? You know, like how far does this go?
They fly high now.
They fly high now. They fly high now. And just on an image level, that's an engaging image. Like this tiny little being kind of going through the clouds on a jetpack, you know?
Yeah.
And there just isn't quite enough of that, and it doesn't all add up to a lot. There was cool stuff, you know, like with all of the drop ships going through the clouds, and then the TIE interceptors coming back. And there's, listen, one of the coolest things about this whole series is that there's an idea that there's a group of Mandalorians that stole a Star Destroyer and just fly around in it.
Yeah,
you know, and unfortunately, that's gone. But you know, it went out with a bang. But yeah, I'm struggling with this season just because I feel like it was so all over the place. The midsection was so nothing. We were talking about this, how it's Celebration, that I think Katie Sackhoff said something like, you won't believe how much happens in the next three episodes.
Yeah.
Or something. And it's like, well, how come so little happened in the last three then?
Yeah. Yeah.
In
reality, yes, lots of things happened, and I don't disagree with Katie Sackhoff. Tons happened in those last two episodes. We have not moved the ball at all. Mandalorian and Grogu are main characters of this show. Everything that happened in this season didn't need to happen and hasn't really changed anything. What changed for them was in the Book of Boba Fett, and that's where our character stories, in a sense, were resolved. You could have just gone from the Book of Boba Fett to the finale, not even the whole finale of this season, but just to them getting to their hut out in the outer reaches of the galaxy and trying to work with the New Republic. And that could have been a logical kind of progression of them. He saves him, brings him back. Grogu decides to not go with Luke, and they meet up, and they're just sitting in their cabin together on the front porch. Nothing in this season was monumental to them, because the things that were implied were then stated in this finale. Oh, I adopt him. I'm sorry, that was already implied. We didn't need that spelled out to us.
That was like so. That was so emotionally resolved like two seasons ago.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So for there to be this big emotional moment where they're like, "This is what this has all been leading to," it's kind of like we did this, like exactly what you said. We did this already.
Yep.
We knew this.
Well, and you can say the same thing.
They
about...
call him like his kid all the time. Like I believe exactly. people have called him his son. Like it, they did. It just is a thing where it's like, why? Why do you? We've had this. This is paid off emotionally. Why do you feel the need to pay it off logistically in the narrative? Mm-hmm.
Again, which to me, just overdoing it, oversharing, overtelling. Let us just have. I mean, this is not a show about subtext. But if you and it was very overt anyway. But to have a scene where it's like, now this is your adopted child, unnecessary, unneeded. But speaking of, we've already been here, we've already done this. Moff Gideon, we've been here, we've done this. There's nothing more. Is he going to come back next season because one of his clones somehow survived? What are we doing? Why, like, the power of that moment from before where he was this looming presence over two seasons and more so in the second season. I like, he was the villain that was vanquished. He was done. We didn't need to bring him back.
It is like a super shredder kind of thing.
Super shredder. Yes.
But also we discover the clones and they're destroyed in the same scene.
Well, I mean, technically we've been seeing them for a couple seasons, I guess, even though we know they basically set up that there were two cloning things going on. So there's still that opportunity for Snoke to be a clone.
Well, no, but like the reveal, I understand that we've seen that there were clones and that, you know, they've.
No, I completely agree with you. I was trying to be generous somewhat that we've maybe seen, but I agree with you. We're introduced to them and they're gone in a second.
And hey, Matt, you know, Mike, and that's what I love about you. You don't let me get away with anything. You know?
That's what people love about anyone who would do that.
But the reveal that they were Moff Gideon clones, and then he's like, I'm making a bunch of dark troopers that are me in suits.
That has happened to have the Force. I gave them the Force because, you know, as someone might say, that's not how the Force works.
Right. Okay. Well, you know that I don't mind the midichlorians thing.
Fair. No. That's very much could be the case. But I guess we've always kind of implied that you need to have some sort of connection to the Force to be able to use the Force, whether you have midichlorians or not. And the idea of injecting Force was interesting.
Yes, the midichlorians thing. So if we're looking at this viewpoint from how like Dave Filoni would look at it as he's like talked about the Force, is that midichlorians exist and they may in the world of the of Star Wars may imply some kind of inclination toward the Force that some may have, but I certainly don't see it as the end all be all. And Moff Gideon is exemplifying why he would not be in connection with the Force because he thinks that it's all about midichlorians.
Exactly.
And it's like the fact that you're saying that, my man, is why you'll never be able to access the Force.
Which
you're
is not again, open to it. I would have probably felt a little bit better if he would have said midichlorians. And I know I wouldn't have said that 3 years ago before we started doing this podcast, 5 years ago before we started doing this podcast. But but that the clunkiness of it is being like, I want to give them the Force. My clones will have the Force. It just felt terrible.
Yeah, because I think the series has done an interesting thing of like introducing the midichlorians, which I understand were a very controversial thing. And then kind of, you know, if you take it all as a whole, kind of being like, but midichlorians are not the whole deal.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And like they certainly don't mean that it's going to all end up okay, but the big reveal is that they're Moff Gideon clones, and then literally in that scene are dispatched. See him, and then they blow him up, and then he's like, "My clones," you know. Like, you're just like, okay,
which
a quick thing for me to care about, and now
Tobai
is the ultimate, like what the ultimate showdown of this season has built up to. Which is another flaw because the idea of Moff Gideon was introduced at the end of like episode 3 or episode 4.
Yeah,
that it's and I guess that's why we had that whole amnesty program thing because we had to see that his little helper was helping him get away, but she never really
didn't amount to anything.
She
gave him the message at the beginning of the penultimate episode of the season. Which allowed him to know that the Mandalorians were fighting and stopped the pirates on Navarro, which I guess allowed him to be more prepared for their arrival on Mandalore. That was kind of, I guess, the purpose of that. But for a character who got a huge spotlight in an episode, and I particularly enjoyed her performance, it was
she's fine.
That didn't go anywhere. It could in another season, I guess.
But you know, and there have been articles about this because it seems like kind of generally a lot the critical reception of this has been like, you know,
yeah.
But there have been a lot of articles about like I think I read one today that was. The headline for the AV Club was like Star Wars is running out of Star Wars to reference.
It is.
And it really is kind of falling prey to that. It's, I understand that this is antithetical because we talk about how like not everything needs to feed into everything else. But if you're introducing all this cloning stuff and whatever, like I'm sure you, like I, when they showed that, you were like, oh, it's going to be like Snopes.
Yeah.
And, while I don't think that we need to tie everything into the Skywalker saga, that certainly would have been more satisfying than what they did.
Yeah, and they've already opened up that can of worms. Like, they've already tied it all to the Skywalker saga.
It was such like a tease, right? It was such a tease. They know that we're thinking that.
Yeah.
Right? They know that the audience is thinking like, oh, this must be the answer to Snoke.
Yeah.
So they're kind of like stringing you along, and then they want the reveal that it's Moff Gideon to be this huge, like, oh my god, but it's not.
No.
And then it's over. So it's just strange. I don't know if they're overestimating, and this has nothing to do with Giancarlo Esposito, who I think is a phenomenal actor who's really doing it.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with his performance. It's just like, I think they're overestimating. You know how like Jurassic World, you're like, I think they're overestimating our investment in blue.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about Moff Gideon.
I agree with you. I do think he... I could see how that would happen because he did feel like a great villain when he's standing outside the cantina and then he blows everyone away in the first season, in the finale of the first season. And him flying around on that TIE fighter plus Ludwig Göransson's music was so impactful. And now they just kind of reuse it because he's no longer working on the show. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I agree with you. And it did feel, you know, deflating in that sense. We don't need it to be tied together, but they're trying to tie everything together. And what are we going to prolong this a little bit more into another season just to continue to see them build to the First Order? You know, I don't need it. And I didn't, it meant so little, but it was so odd that he had like no protection for his very, very highly valued clones that he was creating. They were just like two buttons and done.
It seems that Din hit the like, kill button.
Yeah, there's a giant kill button. Eject. Yeah. Eject the carcasses.
Well, and so one of the more I enjoy like the Mandalorian like culture exploration that like happens in the show. And one of the more interesting things I think that happened this season was, you know, the blacksmith in Bo-Katan kind of having that understanding where they're like, this is not a time for us to be like to really like be like nitpicky about how we go about the Mandalorian ideology.
Yeah.
You know, like we're on the verge of extinct. We need to, if we're going to move forward, then we need to accept that there are essentially different sects and denominations.
Yep.
Like sect and denominations of like the Mandalorian culture, which is interesting. To me, that's interesting as world building. It's not all that interesting as plot.
Yeah.
100%. And that seems to be what the show kind of wants to do, which is like, instead of this just being an aspect of the world that we're experiencing because we're following our two main characters, and I understand they've been trying to make it more of a ensemble piece, but not quite successfully.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, this could have been a thing that as our two main characters are moving through the world, we're experiencing because they're on their own quest, but they dropped their quest very early.
Yeah.
And then it became this kind of like, I don't know, there's not like a clear quest. They're just kind of checking things out and then things happen.
Yeah.
And I just, there didn't feel like a lot of propulsive movement forward.
No, I did not. I mean, talking about not really having much care of what's happening in the action, because there's a lot of time where our characters that we care about aren't even in the action. It's a weird feeling. And I texted this to the group thread of everybody on the pod. I just basically said, I just watched the finale of a Star Wars streaming series and it's already out of my brain. Like, I'm not thinking about it. And maybe that is something to be said that they played it safer based on reaction that they got to the end of season two that some people loved, some people didn't love. But this was not a choice. This was just let's do what we've done before. And as you said, let's reference some things we've seen before. And we'll maybe, you know, hint at some other lore things. We'll try to build a little bit of that. It feels like they're setting up a spinoff for Bo-Katan, because why not at this point?
Yeah.
It seems like they've done that already. And, you know, then Mandalorian could be Ranger of the New Republic. He can just take over what Cara Dune was supposed to do. And they can take whatever scripts they had and give that to him so that they can keep that going. I don't know. Pedro Pascal can continue to come in for a week worth of work and make that all happen. But to your point that you made earlier, you're running out of things to reference. This is the choice. And I just, the one thing that in my mind, and I'm not, I think it's a little unfair because it's not just on him solely, but when he gets all the writing credits, it's like, I can't believe that Star Wars made a decision to choose Jon Favreau. And it was not a one-to-one. That's what I'm saying. But in my mind, it's like, we're going to put everything we have behind Jon Favreau rather than put everything we have behind Rian Johnson, who's made episodic television that is absolutely enthralling every single week in Poker Face and what he created with that team. And instead, you know, we're just living in the Jon Favreau world of here's what I do in my backyard with the action figures.
Well, maybe a bit unfair. Also, there's a bigger issue happening, I think, with what is like becoming like what is known as auteur television, which is in a way kind of an oxymoron. but you know, Filoni wrote some episodes, but it's mostly Jon Favreau. Like, they are the two most credited writers, and it's Jon Favreau. I think his name is on every script.
Yep.
Right. And I disagree with the choice in television to not have a writer's room.
Yeah.
I just think it's kind of like how colleges don't like hiring professors that went there because they don't want to keep the pool of thought the same.
Yeah. Wow. You know? That's perfect, Ryan.
I think it's a mistake, you know, to not have a writer's room. And if you look at things that are really distinct, like Damon Lindelof's shows are very singular, you know, the ones that he heads up.
Yep.
In experience, and you know, they certainly have his stamp on them. But if you look, he has writer's rooms. He has in interviews said that like that is the biggest part of the whole thing, is like putting together a good writer's room. You need like different thoughts, different creativity, blah blah blah.
This is now the Mrs. Davis pod.
Oh my god. Dude, I could talk about that.
Oh, I haven't watched it yet. Oh,
it's awesome. But also a big writer's room. I think that I just think it's a mistake to have that many episodes of a thing coming from one mind, because it becomes like this. You know what I mean? It becomes like they have their sense of what people care about, what they care about, what they think people should be looking at and paying attention to. And it's like, I don't know what it's like. Maybe they're bouncing it off of a lot of people, but I have a feeling that they're cranking this out so fast that it's just kind of like, let's, you know, this is what we're going with. Everybody's loved it. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, and then you end up a scene in the last episode that I feel like is exemplary of like the entire experience of this season was when Grogu's stuck in a room with three Praetorian guards and he's hopping around on lighting fixtures for, you know, in episode time, what, 5 minutes?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and they're swinging at him and they're missing. And you're just like, shouldn't these light fixtures be falling down by now? Why are we still watching him for the eighth time jump from one to the other? And like, what they're establishing is like the fiercest killers in the Star Wars universe, you know, like, and which I think is interesting. Like, they were like, to build the mythology of Praetorian guards, where they're like, we need three Praetorian guards.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, I don't know if you need three, like that whole thing.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool, you know, and they show up and they're wearing their red and you're like, this is cool. I know, you know, this is right on. And I was just like, is this really like what they're doing? Is that they think we want to see Grogu jump so much that we'll watch this and like the light fixture should be falling down. This scene is nothing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it felt. It was just like, oh, they didn't have like enough ideas to fill this whole scene with action. So they just kind of like let the same action happen over and over again.
Yep.
And it's just baffling when you're watching something like this. Have to be like, there's so much resource. Why is this?
Yeah. Have you seen the meme? The only thing good to come out of that scene and some of, you know, Grogu just doing extra jumping throughout the show. Mm-hmm. Have you seen the meme of the combo of Pedro Pascal from SNL where he's playing like the grandma? And,
oh, yeah, yeah.
And so he's like, my son does not have ADD. He just likes to jump.
Oh, and then they show Grogu. That's funny.
Show Grogu. That's funny. My favorite part of that. But yeah, I agree with you. And really, Grogu, afterthought throughout this season. He was a fixture. He was... again, you know, an action figure. He didn't really have much to do. He wasn't really sought after. It was mentioned that they wanted to use his midichlorians, but he's just there and there to do a few cute things. And we've got IG, they say IG-12. Is that what he's called now?
I guess probably, yeah.
So
that makes sense.
IG-12 came along and, you know, he's now the Marshal of Navarro. Cool. I don't think we're going to see, I feel like Navarro is done. I don't really know.
Every season, I think that they're done with Carl Weathers, and every season he gets more and more of a role.
I mean, look, good for him. Good for Carl Weathers.
That's not a complaint. I love Carl Weathers, and he's really getting a stew going.
He's always got that stew going.
I think that I
really, if anything, though, I want
in the text
I want
chain,
him.
I do think he's giving the performance of a mall Santa.
What I would really love, though, is for...
Which is charming. I genuinely do love Carl Weathers. I think that this performance is strange.
I want him to be out in the town square of Navarro, and I want him jumping around singing, I live in Navarro.
That'd be great.
That would be what I want.
That'd be great. And then also, if it was Life Day, and, you know, maybe, I don't know what the Life Day Santa is. But, you know, the kids are telling him what they want and stuff, you know.
A cool, giant,
I do
like,
really like Carl Weathers, but I again, it's like I think they're overestimating our investment in Navarro.
Well, I think they said we've designed this; it's very easy for us to keep using this, and not even from a physical set standpoint. We've got the digital world we created for this, mm-hmm. and we know how to dress it up to make it work. But you know,
now you said that what's his name, Axe Wolf?
Yeah, Axe Wolf.
He has a son, right?
No, Paz Vizsla was the one who had the son.
Paz Vizsla has a son.
Yeah.
Who's a Mandalorian.
Yeah.
And he has the helmet and stuff.
Yeah.
Right? He's one of the little ones that they're like, you know, baptized, whatever the
ceremony
is.
Ryan, where are you going with this? Are you saying whether they keep their helmet on during the old...
That's exactly where I'm going with it, Mike. I want to know.
They have to.
Right in.
They have to. They
keep their helmets on.
Very clearly stated. Yes, they have to keep their helmets on.
They keep their helmets on during, is what you're saying.
Ryan, there's a corner of the internet where I'm sure you could find.
But this is a real question surrounding this, so it's a real question off of a joke question. Although I do want to know. If the helmet's on, does the rest of it need to be on? I understand for them to make a little Mandalorian that like something needs to be off.
It's
but I'm
the
wondering
armor,
if
the
if
armor
it's everything
accommodates.
But one thing, you know what I mean?
The armor accommodates, Ryan. That's all that I think.
You think the armor, you don't think it's like they're just what would be like referred to as Winnie the Pooh-ing, but up one appendage where it's just the mask is covered.
Yeah, I just think that, or it is, you know, hey, what's going on in that cave? I hear a lot of clanking. Are they making more armor? No. Well, they're making more something.
You dirty dog. If the best car is a knockin'. I'd have to ask Filoni.
Yeah. We'll get him on the pod.
I think, and write in. Feel free to write in.
Droidspod@gmail.com.
I think when they're making little Mandalorians, it's only helmet on.
Yeah, I'd agree.
You agree with that?
I think that's the choice, yeah.
And then maybe they like wrap in one of their capes or something after.
Well, look, Ryan, the natural follow-up to our Wake Up with Mando's episodes is Mando After Dark.
Yeah, and I can tell you don't want to talk about this, but I really do want to. So.
I'm happy to continue talking
no,
about
I
it.
No, I genuinely think it would be only helmet.
Yeah.
I think it'd be foolish to do it
any
other way.
Why would their religion preclude them from, you know, taking off other elements of their armor for the fact of continuing to expand their sect or their covert?
Well, no, yeah, I just think They're crazy about the helmets. They don't mention anything else.
Well, look, fan art is a big thing in Star Wars. And
fan art is a big thing, and you know what? I'm sure it exists already. I'm positive it exists already. But like, I could see that. You know what? I could see the right depiction being quite a sight. You know,
Ryan,
what I mean?
You got it. Look, I've got one Mandalorian helmet at home. I think I need two. And let's see where things get. It's a good thing that my partner does not listen to this podcast.
I prefer if you don't see my facial expressions during this.
I think a lot of the known world would prefer that.
Mike, it's your choice whether to keep this.
I mean, look. If you have more, let's go. I don't know. I don't know that I have.
I don't have more. I'm just saying that's where I fall on it. It's helmet only.
This has been Mando After Dark. We'll be back
and
again.
And like maybe people have like a funny, you know, like a funny thing in like a, you know, like a funny, you know how people have like live, love, laugh in their kitchen? Like maybe above the bedroom door, like it, when they're in college or something, they have something funny that says like, this is a helmets only zone or something, you know?
They can't put the helmet on the door because they have to wear the helmet.
they put the cape on the door.
There you
and
go.
They, yeah. Oh my God.
Oh, all right. Yeah. All right, there it is. I will say they picked the wrong series to imply sex in because they did that in Andor. Why not in The Mandalorian?
Yeah, and I guess what we're saying is that the presence of children implies sex.
Implies so a lot.
You need to be willing to reckon with that, Favreau. If you want there to be any young people in your show, it implies that they were made by somebody, and we got questions.
All storytelling implies that. All right. Well, we've talked about how hopefully what we have next with Ahsoka, even though, and I guess we should go back to the beginning of chapter 23 and Moff Gideon and his round table. What do they call it? The stealth squad or the...
I don't know. That
the,
was, yeah.
the shadow council, something like that.
Something like that. Yeah, that sounds good.
And they talk.
I know what
bit,
you're talking about.
They get, oh, you know, when's Thrawn coming? When's Thrawn coming? Okay, Thrawn will be here, and we know Thrawn will be there in Ahsoka, and very exciting with Mikkelsen reprising the role.
Oh
and
yes, very cool.
In live action,
and we've seen the back of his head in a teaser now.
Yeah, very very cool. That's going to be great.
His ears were blue. His hair was blue. Mm-hmm. They're doing it.
I bring it up because it was interesting that they hinted at it here. There were some interesting, I mean, like what Thrawn's number two general was in that Shadow Council as well. Mm-hmm. And as much as that is connected to
and
what
a Hux.
We, yes, and a Hux. Hux's older brother. Right? No, right. Dad. Right? It's Donald Gleason's older brother is playing the role, but it's...
I think he's playing his father.
Yeah, he's playing his father. He's playing his father.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you know what? Like, I before I knew it was Donald Gleason's older brother, I was like, he's nailing that accent.
Yeah, he's right there.
Although, you know what? He still is, because that's not Donald Gleason's accent.
No.
He's doing a voice. So yeah. He did a very... They both nailed it. Right.
Well,
go on. Sorry.
But it's interesting because I think there's a lot of talking about that and it feels all tied in, but I still feel like Ahsoka has taken us into totally new ground. The way that even though Clone Wars and Rebels was so connected, it was new aspects of the storytelling of Star Wars.
Big
and
time.
New.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And so with the Acolyte, Andor season 2, and Ahsoka on the horizon in the next year, because Mandalorian, we don't know when that's coming back. I don't think it's going to come back in the next year because they have these other series that are in the mix. I don't think we're going to see it next December or something.
Right, and they're announcing movies and stuff.
Again. Yeah, it feels like we are about to embark on an era where we're not going to be just so self-referential for Star Wars. And maybe I'm being optimistic, but it feels like new stories about Thrawn. And as much as, I mean, Dave Filoni, he's the one who's going to be controlling most of Ahsoka. I don't think it's the tandem effort between the two of them. I know that John Favreau will have some executive producer credit or something, but it's his show. It's Filoni's show. And the one thing you never felt about the Clone Wars and Rebels was just that this was just a rehash of something else we saw in Star Wars.
No, and it's interesting because obviously it feels like antithetical to say that seeing an Ahsoka show will bring us something new. However, like you said, Ahsoka exists in this part of Star Wars that has consistently shown us new things.
Yeah.
So it's like in a world where, of course, they're going to take a character we know already to move forward. The difference between Clone Wars and Rebels, aside from aesthetically, was striking because Rebels was introducing so many new ideas, like the World Between Worlds, things like that, you know. So if we're going to have a character bring us through that, it would be Ahsoka. So I still have very high hopes for that show. Yep. I think that, you know, exploring the Thrawn thing, the big thing on the internet this week after they announced Filoni's like directing a movie is that people think he's making an Heir to the Empire movie. And that'd be cool. Obviously it would have to be very different because the Heir to the Empire books are essentially the second or the second trilogy, what would now be the third trilogy.
Yeah.
And it includes a lot of the legacy, what are now known as the legacy characters.
Yeah.
So that's different, but also Ahsoka didn't exist then. So her presence would be, would kind of take the protagonist role, I assume. So that's exciting. You know, it's doing something old in a new way, at least. Maybe that's the best we could hope for.
Yeah.
I still, you know, the Acolyte I'm excited for, and of course Andor, you know, is the kind of like bright shining star of the whole thing at this point.
I've said it before and I'll say it again, but Ryan, where would we be mentally if we had not had Andor? And like we just went Book of Boba Fett to season 3 of Mando.
I think Andor is keeping the ship afloat in ways that may be understated, honestly.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that we'd have a lot of Andor, excitement to continue to pod if we didn't have Andor.
Yeah, I don't think about Andor like on a daily basis, but I know that, I hardly think about it when I'm watching The Mandalorian, but I think that on a like on a macro level, the kind of shot in the arm that it gave a lot of people is, you know, being felt. The ripples are being felt.
Yeah.
I think it would be a tough. I think the 1-2 punch of Book of Boba Fett into this season of The Mandalorian would be a tough pill to swallow.
Well, especially at that point, for the majority of the season, we would have not known that there are any films on the horizon. I'm go back, listen to the Star Wars Celebration episode with Chris and Sam, the James Mangold doing a Star Wars movie. That gets me very excited. But yeah,
he was early attached to do a Boba Fett.
He was, which
movie, or given, rumored at least. I don't know if he was officially attached, but he was the guy.
Given what we saw from that show, I would have loved to have seen that movie instead.
Well, yeah, it was him and then Josh Trank. Remember?
Yep.
And then Josh Trank tranked his career, and then but yeah, so Mangold's clearly been in the conversation for a long time.
Which is great, and he's a proven track record of being, you know, they're not giving a young filmmaker that they're going to have to change the tide on. I feel like they're going to hopefully be able to continue to move forward with him. It's more about his schedule more than anything.
He makes movies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And
he makes the movies.
Look, it's summer of indie to me. I've said it before. It's the summer of indie, and I can't wait to see what he does with indie. I think he's going to do something that's going to have ripple effects as well. Ryan, anything else we want to talk about with this last two episodes, the season as a whole? I feel like we've gotten into a lot of the way we feel about this. I don't know. I love, like, you bring in the casting of the Mandalorians who've remained on Mandalore, and I apologize, I should go look up their names. One of them is from Breaking Bad, but then the other is the other, like,
he's
lieutenant.
In Top Gun.
Yeah, in Maverick. And I'm like, I want to see more of him. I am
Yeah,
totally
they were cool.
On.
I like that. I like that whole thing.
Yeah, and it just made me be, you know, I like that whole thing, but we got so little of that whole thing.
So little.
I guess that's fine. Yeah. It's fine because we're going to get more maybe in another season or near another series.
But I'm sick. You know what? I'm sick of feeling that way.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm sick of feeling like it's all set up. And listen, I don't want to invoke this on it this early, you know, but we must because I don't feel like invoking whatever the reaction on the internet could be. I say that like anyone's like reacting to me on the internet. What I mean is a mean review. Ouch. remember when we watched The Last Jedi and we were like, that was a full meal.
Yeah.
They weren't just hinting at things. This feels like the opposite.
Yeah, which is why we feel that way. I mean, every episode of Andor felt like a full meal. I mean, or almost. I mean, you'd say a nice course within a full meal as we continued in those three episode strings.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, like, it's episodic television, and every episode can't be the whole thing.
But I felt satisfied at the end of every episode, much like those wearing helmets in the back of the cave.
Right. It's like, it can't be the whole story, but it needs to be a whole story.
Yeah.
a-hole story.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Speaking of the actors, though, Charles Baker and Charles Parnell, they're the two actors who had a nice moment and were brought in, and we're happy to see them within Star Wars.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I hope that they got us again, Mike, you know?
Well, they always have us. I don't... You know, I was trying to watch the finale, and I was like, you know, I've always said that if I was just existing in the world of Star Wars, that's good enough for me. And in a lot of ways, it was. And I liked watching R5 and the mouse droids. Did you think that those Did you think those were literally action figures? Like, I don't... It looked like a sideshow collectible still image a lot of the time. And it made me just think, did they build full-size R5 for this shot? Or is this whole scene literally just action figures and they're kind of pulling it off stop motion style?
That'd be so funny. I think they probably built it, but it would be really funny if it was just like a miniature.
I would have loved if they did a miniature, and then they should have, you know, highlighted it and talked about it.
That scene with the mouse droids was really good. The highlight of the whole thing was when Grogu grabbed that dude's hand and just hit the no button. Yeah, but you're right. They always have us. I will say this. Since The Mandalorian has begun, you know, since season one, I wake up early that morning and watch the episode. This is the first week. First off, I didn't know it was the finale.
Yeah.
And then this is the first week that I, like, straight up forgot.
Yeah.
Where, like, Wednesday I went into the office or whatever, and I was like, oh, my God, The Mandalorian was on today.
Well, it doesn't drive you in that same way. And I
yeah, it just doesn't have the pull. No, you know.
But I also... Again, for anybody who's watching it who loved the last two episodes, I'm glad you were able to find that joy in it. We don't want to take that away. I just like to come off the final part of that chapter 23, The Spies, where Paz Vizsla dies. It's like that ends making me be like, I'm supposed to feel something, and I feel nothing. And maybe it's my own problem. Maybe I'm just an empty shell of a human.
I fully accept the possibility that, like, it is us, that we are just getting older, we have seen more like media, you know.
Yeah.
We've talked about this ad nauseum. But you know, it's kind of like when you hear like your favorite rock band when you're 13 for the first time.
Yeah.
And it blows your mind. And like when you're older, you've heard a lot of rock music or whatever music, insert genre here, that it's hard for it to do that still. So I fully accept that it just may be that, like, our experience with it is as such, and that the problem is not with the show. I think that there are definitive issues with some of the storytelling, but that doesn't always mean that the emotional, like, moments don't hit. So here's maybe they're just not hitting for us.
Here's what we need to do. Find a 12-year-old. We bring them on the pod, and we talk to them about what they think about this show. And we keep out Mando After Dark in that conversation.
Of course, and of course, their parents would be involved in things like that. We can't just find one. You know?
Fine. Don't just find a 12-year-old, no.
We have to contact the parents of a 12-year-old and ask if they like the show.
They can come on the on the podcast, and they can introduce their 12-year-old so that everything seems above.
Yeah, and then we'll
ask
them questions. That would be fun, honestly. I really would. I don't know any parents of 12-year-olds. So.
You know what? It's funny. I feel like I should, but I don't. I'll have to work on that. But what we need...
I'd love to work on
that. I guess maybe not. Maybe I shouldn't.
Top of my priority.
I'm going to start coaching kids baseball soon. So, you know, that sounds weird. I don't know.
Is that true?
Yeah, for a 4-year-old.
That's awesome. This is a peek behind the sausage. I genuinely didn't know that about your life. That's very cute.
Well, that's something when you get...
Mike has a 4-year-old. Like, I'm assuming it's your 4-year-old.
No, it's a bunch of other 4-year-olds.
Your kid wasn't invited.
No, not at all.
He said, no, I'm not going to coach your team.
This is Bad News Bear style, and that's what we're doing.
Yeah, you're coaching the opposing team.
Yes, and they're going to win.
Hey,
and
I'm going to tell you, he can't hit anything that's in the lower right box.
You don't have to even put it in the place of they're 4 years old. You can't hit anything anyway.
Yeah, it's like, I imagine it's still T-ball at that point.
Well, they do have coach pitch. You know, this is the part of the pie that everybody was looking forward to.
When I was a kid and playing, I didn't play that young, but I played fairly young, probably 6 or 7. And it would be like, they do coach pitch. And if you had 3 strikes, they'd get the T out.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
It's tough because they should teach that strikeouts are a thing. Like, we need to learn to deal with strikeouts.
Well, that's the whole participation trophy conversation. Which...
Well, yeah.
You have to imagine there's a participation trophy just being given out to anybody who's in the Mandalorian. Because they participated, you know, they made it through. Did anybody die in the jetpack fight? I don't remember.
If they did, I don't know. That moment, the ticking clock of the Star Destroyer crashing into the mine should have been more of a ticking clock.
Yeah. And then,
as opposed to like, who's in there? I don't know. They all got out. It was fine.
Well, and then of course there was a nice Deus Ex Grogu where they're all, the flames are coming and Bo-Katan puts up her tiny shield. And I,
that like, was hysterical.
I said out loud, I was like, yep, that's going to do it. You're going to be safe there. And then
Grogu, and then you looked around at an empty room.
Yeah, there was definitely an empty room.
Do you think it would have been a nice piece of corporate synergy if when they revealed that they were protected in the little bubble that Grogu's first words were, "We are Grogu."
It would have been, yes. And then they could have had a combo figurine set, which they probably are.
Yeah, and they
could have
played like a Jefferson Starship song.
He's ready for Guardians 3 coming out in just a few weeks. Mm-hmm. If only Disney paid us for that. That'd be great. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it, Ryan. I think we'll be back in the next few weeks. We'll get Chris's thoughts, maybe Sam's thoughts on how this all concluded. And then we'll start thinking about what we're doing before Ahsoka comes out in August. Maybe take a little bit of droid time, but also I would think there's a lot that we can explore. Someone, and I'm not talking about you, Ryan, is going to be doing a playthrough of Jedi Survivor.
Oh, baby.
Unless you want to do it too.
We do competing playthroughs.
Yeah, I have this.
I mean,
time
I am
going
to play it, but I think, you know, maybe we do a joint thing where you're playing and we're both talking. We could do one of those things.
I'm on board.
We have the technology. Chris and I used to do Twitch streams at the height of the pandemic.
I love it. Let's do it. I think we should get into. I mean, it's coming out in just 1 week. 1 week from today.
Is that true? It's that soon? I thought it was May.
No, it's April 28th. They moved it from March. It was supposed to be like March 11th, and then they moved it to April, and here we are, Jedi Survivor on the horizon. It's a nice little good way for us to continue. We don't have to take any time off. Star Wars can continue on the droids pod.
And that'll carry me straight through to Zelda time, too. But
what day
that's
is that again? Is that May 23rd?
May 12th.
Ooh, 12th. Wow, even sooner.
It's soon.
Right.
It's soon. Yeah.
I need to beat Jedi Survivor in that 2 week span or 3 weeks.
It can be done.
All right. I've got the time. I can make it happen. Yeah. Ryan, what a chance to talk about this. As much as we continue to malign some of the things that are happening, talking Star Wars and the droids pod, nothing better. I would do it no matter what the show was. And we do.
It's great being here with you this morning, Mike.
And we'll see you again after dark. That will do it for the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. You hear that back in the cave? Count me in.
The clanking of helmets.
The clanking of helmets.